You know, sometimes as my job, I get to do some fun things. And so this week, one of the things I did is I spent a little bit of time Googling some fun quotes on waiting. And I wanted to share some of these because they all made me giggle. Like this one, waiting builds character. And by character, I mean frustration, snack cravings, and bad decisions, right? About legitimate. Another one said, they say good things come to those who wait. And I say, have you tried Amazon Prime? And I love this. One guy said, I mastered the art of patience for 6.5 seconds. And I love this. A guy said, I know God is never late, but sometimes it feels like he's running on dial-up. And I know some of you that are like younger than me, you're like, what's dial-up? You'll never know. You'll be thankful you never had to experience dial-up. Man, we can acknowledge like waiting is the worst. We hate waiting for anything. This is why we yell at the microwave, right? Like we yell at the microwave. This is why I've been around some of you. Some of you have a ministry of horn. You know what I mean? Where you're driving, you honk, 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 hurry up, get moving. Because we don't like to wait. None of us like waiting. Waiting is the worst. And often what happens is when we're waiting, because we don't like waiting so much, sometimes we have the tendency to try and take matters into our own hands. We try and take control of the situation so we don't have to wait, so we can shortcut things. Like, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but how many of you ever been to the grocery store, all right? You go to the grocery store, you're picking up two items. You go get your things, and you come up to the front of the store, and this is like the most important decision you're ever going to make in your life. You know what decision it is? Which checkout aisle you go in, right? Now you look and there's 10 checkout aisles, but only two of them are open, all right? You look at the first line and it's an older guy and you're like, oh my goodness. You know that's not the line to go into because you know that older guy, and I don't mean any offense by this, but that older guy, you've been waiting all day to go to the grocery store to talk to somebody. You've been waiting to talk to the clerk. And so you know the old guy, he's going to be like, hey, what do you think it's going to rain today? And then if you wait for that guy, he's going to pull out a checkbook. I know, again, some of you young people are like, what's a checkbook? Well, it's a thing. So you know, like, that's not the line to get into if you're going to try and check out quickly. You look at the second line, the second checkout aisle, and it's got like a mom with four little kids. And she's got a month's worth of groceries. And you're like, nope, not my aisle. And you're sitting here like, man, I'm going to have to wait until all of a sudden God parts the Red Sea, right? And you look and there's self-checkout. And you're like, bingo, that is my solution. That is how I can take control of the situation. I can navigate and get out quicker. So there's two self-checkout aisles. And there's somebody in front of them, both of them, and you're watching. And the first guy, first gal, first person, they're checking out, and you're like, man, this is going to be great. Until you watch in horror as that person pulls out a satchel of coupons. Right? You know what we're talking about. They pull that satchel of coupons. They're going to push a button for the clerk to come, and you're like, hey, somehow you found the line of the coupon queen. Or coupon king, or you know, whatever you prefer. And let me just say this, get this off my chest. If you have a coupon, you don't belong in the self-checkout aisle, okay? Amen? All right. You know that guy's gonna take a while because they're gonna fiddle through all their coupons trying to find the right one. So then you turn your attention to the other checkout, self-checkout, and you're like, this is it. The guy's up there, he scans this food really quick, and you're like, yes, this is gonna be it. Until you see him take a double look at the screen. And then you watch him, he pushes the little button for the clerk to come over, and he's like, this item is on sale, but it doesn't show on my screen. I want my 50 cents. And so all of a sudden, you see the clerk look at it, see the clerk get on the little microphone. Can I get a price check on a canned whole chicken? I need a price check on a canned whole chicken. And then you watch as that teenage clerk, right? That teenage kid who doesn't know anything about the grocery store is like, I'll go price check it. And you watch that teenager go this way and you're like, yeah, but the canned food section is this way. He doesn't know where he's going. Anybody ever been there? This is counseling for me. This is expressing my frustration of going to the grocery store. And you're sitting here and you're like, I just wanted to get in and out. And you're like, what am I even doing here? But isn't life like this? Where we just don't like waiting. We don't like waiting on people. We don't like waiting on outcomes. And we don't always like waiting on God either. And so what we do is we look for shortcuts. We look for ways that we can take matters into our own hands. And sometimes that works, and sometimes we find our impatience makes the situation just that much worse. So let me say this. Welcome to Restoration. Man, I'm so glad we get to worship together. We are an ordinary group of people trying to follow an extraordinary God. And so if you're here with us, man, I'd love for you to jump in and be a part of this group of people right here. We've been in this sermon series for a couple weeks now called By Faith, where we're looking at the story of Abraham. And Abraham in the Bible is kind of a prototype, a pattern of what it looks like for us to live a life by faith. And I will say, you know, one of the things I love about the scriptures is that when we look at these Bible heroes, guys like Abraham, it gives us the full story. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is good because it gives me confidence that I can trust the scriptures, that they weren't just written by men trying to convince us to follow this God. It's actually written by God because if a man wrote this story, they're not going to write these bad stories about our Bible heroes. And we've seen the last couple weeks, like the last three chapters, Abram, man, he's been rocking it, like really cool stuff. Like, Abram, you're living by faith. You're amazing. But the text that Corey read for us this morning, today, we're going to see Abram and his wife Sarai, they're going to fail hard. And that's encouraging to me. I don't know if it's for you, but it's encouraging to me because it teaches me and reminds me that no perfect feet walk the path of faith. That even when we are faithless, God still proves himself to be faithful. So today we're going to see that when we struggle to wait on God, like Abram and Sarai are going to do, when we are tempted to take control of matters, of situations, like Abram and Sarai are going to do, it often leads us to chaos and pain. But if we're willing to trust God and allow God's will to happen according to God's way, then that's when it leads us to God's blessing. So we're going to look at three simple points today, and then we'll wrap up. Number one, a struggle of waiting. And this is where I want us to understand the context, because in Genesis chapter 15, right, 5 and 6, David got to preach on this last week. God gave Abram this amazing promise. God says, hey, Abram, I want you to come over here. I want you to look up in the stars. Look up in the sky. You see all those stars. Abram, your ancestors are going to be like that. You're going to have so many ancestors, you can't even number them. And it says, Abram believed God, and God counted that to him as righteousness. And I love that verse because that's the gospel, right? We aren't righteous because we're amazing. We're righteous because we put our faith in Jesus, right? That's what the gospel tells us. And so Abram, like, you got to imagine, like, his faith's got to be an all-time high, right? God just did the animal thing where he cut the animal in half and said, Abram, I'm going to give you ancestors, and look, we're going to walk through these animals to prove that I'm serious about my promise I made to you, right? But then in chapter 16, verse 1, it says, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne to him no children. And this is a little bit of a context for us. Like, it's been 10 years since we read about the promise that God first made to Abram in Genesis chapter 12. 10 years since they left their land, they left their family, have gone into the promised land, have tried to follow after this God. It's been 10 years of waiting. Sarai, she's now in her mid-70s. Abram is in his mid-80s. And they're like, God, if you give us a baby, like, we're all going to need diapers, right? Like who's going to change everybody's diapers, right? You see, like in that culture, barrenness was such a big deal. Like if you couldn't have children, that was like a deep shame. Because the children were a mark of success. They were part of your legacy. And you got to imagine for Sarai, like she knew the promises that God had made. Hey, I'm going to give you children. I'm going to make you a nation. I'm going to make from you, from your ancestors, all the families of the earth are going to be blessed. And Sarai has been waiting for 10 years. And she's like, man, we haven't had, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the, like, what's going on? Like God gave us this promise. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting. Can you imagine like what she would feel like? Forgotten? Frustrated? Can you imagine month after month? Oh, not this month. Year after year. I mean, you would just grow sadder and more frustrated and more impatient. And Sarai does what many of us do. Well, let me give you a little bit of help, God. You need my help to accomplish this. See, here's the thing. If we struggle and we find it difficult to wait, we're going to find it extremely difficult to walk the life of faith. Because, like, do you understand the Bible is full of these commands that if we want the promises of God, we need to wait? Isaiah 40 tells us those who wait on the Lord, he will renew their strength. Lamentations chapter 3, the Lord is good to those who wait on him. James 5, be patient until the coming of the Lord. You see, this idea of waiting is so central to our faith and to the promises of God. But waiting is hard, especially when we don't get a timeline. Like, it'd be one thing if God gave us a promise, it's like, hey, you just need to wait until, you know, until Friday at 4 p.m. Like, hey, I can do that. Friday, there's a deadline. I know what's coming. Sure, I can wait for till then. But when there is no timeline, when it's just this, just wait. That's a whole different ballgame. That's a frustrating ballgame. Because when we get to those moments where we're waiting, where we feel like God has spoken to us, we feel like God has given us a promise, and we're like, God, I'm waiting. I don't see it coming. We start dealing with these questions of the heart, right? Anybody ever deal with some of these questions of the heart? You start thinking about what you want. You start thinking about what you're praying to God for. God, I need a spouse. God, I need a job. God, I need healing. God, I need my child to come back to the faith, whatever it is. And we pray and we wait and we wait, and it seems like God's not showing up, and we deal with these questions of, well, God, are you even hearing me? God, are you even real? God, where are you? God, have you forgotten me? And I think, like, the question we have to ask ourselves is, will we let the questions of our heart overturn our faith? Or will we allow our faith to overturn those questions of the heart? I mean, that's got to be real for some of us in this room. Those questions of God, God, where are you? God, why aren't you showing up? Will those things overturn our faith, or will we put our faith in God that will overturn those questions? Because for Sarai, these questions are going to overturn her faith. And she makes a decision. God, you need my help. God, you need my help. So it says, second point is they're going to create a mess by trying to take control. The mess by trying to take control. It says, back in 16 verse 1, it says she had a female Egyptian servant named Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, behold, God has prevented me from bearing children. Do you hear the blame that she has there? God, it's God's fault. So she says, go unto my servant, that it may be that I shall obtain children by her. When you see that phrase, go unto my servant, it means what you think it means. Okay, we're not going to go there, but that's what it means, right? Now we read this and we're like, now that's pretty messed up. But we're talking polygamy. Isn't that scandalous? Like, this would be like a reality TV show, right? Sister wives or whatever it happens to be. But again, context is key. We have to remember how significant it was for a woman to have a child in that day and age. And so there's a bunch of historic evidence that says culturally, if a woman couldn't get pregnant, she could give one of her servants to her husband, and if that servant became pregnant, that child would become the child of the barren woman, right? So this was a cultural thing. This was acceptable in that time, in that day and age. And I think the key phrase for us is in verse 2, where she says, that I may obtain a child by her. I'm just going to say that's not faith. That is impatience. That is frustration wrapped with somebody trying to take control. Just because something is accepted in the culture, just because it's normal, just because our culture champions it, just because the nation says this is acceptable, it doesn't mean that God commends it. See, there's a word I learned this week called expediency. Expediency simply means a decision based on convenience or practicality, despite the possibility that it might be improper or immoral. This is Sarai. Man, I'm impatient. God, I've been waiting all this time. I'm going to choose something that I feel like I can do so I can take control and I can help further things along. And the worst part of this story is Abram just goes along with it. He doesn't pray. He doesn't push back. He doesn't seek the Lord. His wife's like, I'm going to give you a younger girl. And he's like, okay, I guess I got to do this. So verse 3, it says, Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as his wife. And he went into her, and she conceived. And I just feel like we should pause right here. And does anybody see any problems that might occur at this point? It doesn't take the gift of discernment to see this isn't going to go well, right? So verse 4, when Hagar saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on Sarai. And Sarai said to Abram, may the wrong that's be done to me be on you. I gave you my servant for your embrace, which is a bad idea, but I did it. And when she conceived, she now looks at me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me. And Abram said to Sarai, Hagar is in your power. Do as you please. And Sarah dealt harshly with her. So Hagar fled from Sarai. Right, Hagar gets pregnant. Tensions begin to explode in the home, right? Sarai blames Abram. Abram avoids responsibility. Hagar is mistreated by Sarai. Everyone suffers. Everyone's miserable. This stinks. And as I think about this, and I think, like, we can sit in our pews and we can judge Sarai. We can judge Hagar. We can judge Abraham. We can stand back religiously and say, I can't believe y'all did that. Or we could identify with them and say, how many of us have done that as well? Like, hopefully not the polygamy thing. Like, I hope that's not your thing. I really hope that's not your thing. But how many of us have gotten impatient, have felt entitled? And how many of us have taken matters into our own hands, trying to help God along? See, when we stop trusting God and start taking matters into our own hands, even our good desires become destructive. What happened for Sarai? She's no longer trusting God to do it. No, God, you need my help. I'm going to take control of the matter. I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And even that good desire then becomes destructive. It affects everybody. It affects her, affects Abram, affects Hagar. It's going to affect the children. And I want us to understand that there's a difference between success and blessing. Do you understand this? There's a difference between success and blessing. Success is good. Like, we achieve success. Success is based on our strength, based on our ingenuity, based on our wisdom, based on our ability to put a plan together to make it happen. And there's a lot of us in this room that are incredibly capable. We're incredibly successful. But just because you're successful does not mean you are blessed. Blessing comes from God. Blessing is where the credit for the situation only comes from Him. Blessing is something that glorifies Him and Him alone. And what happens What happens is because we're so capable, because we feel like, man, God, I can help and I can make success out of the situation. Sarai was successful. What was Sarai's goal? To produce a child. She was successful in that. Was it blessed? No, I think it led to chaos and pain. And what happens is rather than pursuing the blessing from God, we think, God, you need my help. God, I'm good enough to make this happen. And we start taking control, trying to get success. And we take our desires, we begin to control them. I mean, this is what happens. We're single people. Man, I really want a relationship. God, I really want to get a relationship. I want to move on. And so what do? Rather than waiting for God to bring the person, we start dating whoever. You got a breath. I'm ready. Let's go. You wind up with someone that's a disaster for a partner, right? This is as parents. Parents with desires for our kids. We begin to pressure and manipulate and try and control our kids rather than praying and trusting for God to take care of them. This is where as business leaders in our workplaces, we begin to pursue shortcuts. Man, I can succeed at this rather than walking with integrity. This even happens in churches. We begin to water down the gospel. We trade faithfulness for flashiness. And it leads to hypocrisy. See, God's will done our way, it might bring results. But it costs us peace. It costs us people. It costs us purpose. Because success and blessing are not the same thing. If we want God's blessing, it's got to be God's will done God's way that leads us to his blessing. So Abram and Sarai, they've made a mess of this. But the cool thing about this is in the middle of the mess, you're going to see the grace of God in their failure. I mean, this could be a message in itself. The grace of God in their failure, but we're going to highlight it today. Sarai had dealt harshly with Hagar, so Hagar took off. She's going back to Egypt where she came from. She's like, I got to get out of here. I'm going to go home. But along the way, verse 7 says, an angel of the Lord found her by the spring and the water in the wilderness. And this is significant. And the Bible scholars, this angel of the Lord, they call this a theophany, likely a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. There's several of these theophanies throughout the Old Testament. Genesis chapter 18, where the men are going to come and visit Abram and Sarai. Genesis 32, the Jacob's wrestling match with God. Joshua chapter 5, commander of the Lord's army. Story of Daniel with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, and the fourth being in them. All these examples of the Lord showing up in the midst of a mess. And it says of the angel, he calls her by name, he interacts with her. He instructs her and says, I want you to return back to Sarai. And then this angel is going to make this beautiful personal promise to this hurting, pregnant servant girl named Hagar. Verse 10, the angel of the Lord said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered. Behold, you are pregnant. You will bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, for God has listened to your affliction. See, like here's the context. Like Hagar, she's all alone. She's all alone in the wilderness. She is an outcast. She is scared. She is rejected. She is pregnant. She is defeated. And like, I don't know what's going on in all of our lives. But I want you to see that as despondent and as hurt and as broken as Hagar was, God came seeking her. God came calling out to her. God spoke to her. God comforted her. God loved her. God made promises to her. And I want you to know that the same God who sought out Hagar, the same God who loved her, who showed up and blessed Hagar, is the same God who is here today. I believe he's the same God who is seeking after you to comfort you, to love you, to bless you. In verse 12, it says, the angel of the Lord said about the son that he's going to be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he shall dwell over and against his kinsmen. Like, there's a lot of information we can talk about right there. Whole message for another day. But I'll tell you, Ishmael is going to be the father of the Arab people, a group of people that are going to oppose the nation of Israel throughout all of history. In fact, there is fighting going on today in the Middle East, and this is Sarai and Hagar's contention playing out still today. There's this things happening now that a Sarai's son and Hagar's son that are still contending and playing out in today's culture this many years later. Why? Because sin has consequences. Sin has consequences. And what we're seeing today in the Middle East is these decisions that were made by Abraham and Sarah so many years ago still playing out today. And I love this. Verse 13, it says, Hagar called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God of seeing." For she said, "Truly I have seen him who looks after me." Here's Hagar. She's running back home. She's despondent. She's lost everything. And God shows up and meets her and makes this promise to her. And what does she do? She stops and she worships. She worships. She gives God a name. She says, "God, you are El Roy, the God who sees me." And she returns to Abram. She returns to Sarah. She gives birth to a son. They name him Ishmael. And what's great about this conclusion is even in the wreckage of somebody else's poor decisions, even in the wreckage of the decisions that Sarah and Abram make and the mess they're dealing with, God meets Hagar with his grace. And that is the God that we worship. That is the God that has sought every one of us in this room to draw us into a relationship with him, not because of what we've done, but because of his son, Jesus. So here's our summary for what this passage is all about. It is God's will done God's way that leads to God's blessing. But God's will done our way often leads us to chaos and pain. Right? How many of us have understood the difference between those two, have experienced it in our own lives? God's will done our way, man, it leads to frustration. People get hurt. But God's will done God's way is where we find the blessing of God. Three simple points of application, we'll wrap up. Number one, where do you need to wait on the Lord? Where do you need to wait on the Lord? What do you need to wait on the Lord for? Now again, I know waiting is the worst. Waiting feels completely unproductive. Waiting feels like, man, this stinks. But while waiting is not easy, waiting is not wasted. It's in the waiting that God begins to work in us and through us. It's in the waiting that God shapes our character, deepens our trust in him, teaches us to depend on him rather than to depend on ourselves. Again, Isaiah 40, those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary, walk and not be faint. See, this is a promise that when we wait on the Lord, when we trust in him to accomplish what he's promised, we are willing to do God's will, God's way. Man, he gives us a new strength. He lifts weary hearts. He renews those of us that feel worn out. And I got to ask, like, where is it you need to wait on the Lord today? How are you tempted to speed up the process to bring success rather than blessing? And maybe in your waiting, what might God be trying to do in you or in people around you as you wait on the Lord? Number two, and this may be more personal, where do you need to surrender control? Where is it for you in your life that you need to surrender control? Now, listen, we live in a society, we're control freaks. Some of you are really good at it too. You've got everything bound and tight, and you're like, man, I can make everything happen. I can be successful at everything I do. And like we sing that song, like, Jesus, take the wheel. We don't really mean that. We want him to be like the airbag so that when I crash the car, like, you're there to protect it, right? I'm going to be in control, and you just be the airbag, right? Now, this is about surrender. Surrender does not come naturally to many of us. But here's the thing. True faith begins when our self-reliance ends. We want to know what true faith is. Our true faith, our real faith begins when we say, God, I'm not going to try it anymore. I'm going to trust you instead. Right? Like, this is the gospel message. This is what this book is all about. The Christian life is about this idea that we don't become a Christian because we're good enough, because we're successful, because we can fold everything and make it all happen. We don't become a Christian because we clean ourselves up and we do enough religious activity. Our salvation simply comes from the point that we learn how to surrender, trust God rather than ourselves. Proverbs 3 reminds us that trusting in God means letting go of our need to understand everything, to be in control of everything, to force everything from happening, and simply to believe that His path is good and better than we could ever imagine. So, where is it for you that you struggle with control? Where do you need to give up control to trust that God is at work? In fact, I remember hearing a story about a mom who had a son that was drifting relationally, drifting spiritually, drifting emotionally, just not doing good. And that mom, man, did what many of us would do. We try to do everything in your can to manipulate the situation. I'm going to control things. I know what's good and right. And you're nagging and trying to control situations, trying to force them back to get close to God. And I love this because this idea, the mentor finally said, you know what? You cannot play the role of the Holy Spirit in your children. I love that. We can apply for the role of the Holy Spirit in our children, in our spouse, in our family, in our work. I think God already has someone to play the role of the Holy Spirit, right? And the moment that mom began to pray more than prod, began to trust that God was at work and seeking after God, as she loosened her grip, God began to tighten His grip on that boy. And how many of us are in that situation? See, surrender is not about giving up. Surrender is not about, oh, I've got nothing to do. Surrender means I'm giving it to God and I'm trusting that His power is better than my pressure. Where is it you need to surrender to the Lord? Finally, number three. Where do you need to experience His grace, even in your failure? Again, I love the real story of Abraham and Sarai. The people that walk by faith, that have days that are faith, make a mess. Because even in the mess, God still shows up with His grace. We worship a God who in His grace and mercy love for us, He so often overrules our lives. He takes the broken pieces, the fractures of the life that we've created, the messes we've made, and He pieces them together into something beautiful, a story of redemption. In fact, I think about this when boys were younger. They get a gift. They get a box of Legos. A box of Legos from the birth. Yes, Legos! And they take the box and they go start building their little contraption, building a little car, or whatever it was. And at some point, naturally, the kids would come to me and say, Dad, it doesn't work. Dad, it's broken. It's not what it was supposed to be. Look at it. Where's the book? Oh, well, I left the book. It's underneath all the wrappings over here. And so I grabbed the monstrosity. God, I'm talking about the Legos, not the child. We bring the monstrosity. I'm like, let's bring it to the book. Let's bring it to the book. Let's go back to the book because we take the book and begins to take these broken pieces and make sense of them. And we can come back and put it in the order that they were created. And isn't that how God treats us? Comes to us in our brokenness. But God, I didn't go by the book. I made my own plans. I tried to create my own creation. I've made a mess. And God comes and brings us back. Say, I want to lead. I want to lead. It's God's will. It's God's will. It's God's will.